Hello, and welcome to another installment of Creating Customer Value with Peppers and Rogers. I'm Megan Kelly with Search CRM. In November's podcast, Martha Rogers answers questions about customer expectations, building brand images and customer loyalty, and how a potential customer becomes a customer. Enjoy.
Hello, it's Martha Rogers from Peppers and Rogers Group. Happy to be back with you answering some questions. We have some excellent questions this month. First one. Beyond surveying, what are the best methods for understanding customer needs and expectations? Well, we think there's always going to be a place for surveying and traditional kinds of random sampling market research. But at the same time, we also see that we're learning a lot about the voice of the customer straight from the voices that come and talk to us. So, for example, HSBC has actually had to reverse a policy where they wanted to get rid of a fee because the people who would be affected, got together on Facebook and said, look, we're all going to leave the company, leave the bank and not do any more business with you if you don't change your policy. And so the company had to change it. And we've also seen some other very interesting things where customers get on and because they're Twittering or they're linking in or they're otherwise talking to each other, then the company gets to listen in and respond if they do that in the right way. The wrong way, of course, would be to pretend to be a customer and come in and have things to say. It's important to be transparent. Make sure that you identify yourself as an employee of the company or as the company itself, but in that way to participate in the conversation. My favorite example is a story I heard recently when I was in Australia. And a guy from a bank said that because they've now linked deliberately into social networking and so forth, that they have Twitter alerts. And somebody gets on Twitter and talks about them, then they can know about it. So here's a guy who's had a problem with the bank. And he's standing in line at the bank branch. And so now he's already annoyed because they have a problem. And now he's secondarily annoyed because he has to stand in line. And while he's standing there, he tweets to everybody who is a follower of his on Twitter. And he mentions the bank and how annoyed he is. And of course, that immediately goes out to the bank. The bank immediately calls the bank branch manager. And they identify the guy. And the bank branch manager walks over to the guy in line and says, we are so sorry that you've had these problems. Let me solve it for you right now. So that's sort of way beyond survey results in terms of understanding customers and then immediately responding to their needs. Second question, how have customer expectations changed, if at all, given the current state of the economy? I think that customers if anything, their expectations have gone both up and down. They've gone up in the sense that we see the players as being more competitive, and therefore customers have come to expect more. If you want my business, I'm not giving out much of it these days, and you've got to do a good job. But at the same time, I also think that, sadly, many customers expect less and less from companies. They just, they've seen so much bad behavior. They have been disappointed so often that they often just expect to be treated badly by the companies they do business with. And so it becomes remarkably refreshing to a consumer when that customer is able to do business with a company that treats it well, serves his own best interests, makes sure that he is going to get what he needs when he needs it, and doesn't have to work for the company without being on the payroll, which, of course, is what many companies expect of their customers. Oh, just drop that back by. We'll fix it for you. Oh, just call us during our convenience, things like that. And we say that all the time to customers who, of course, are not on our payroll. Third question, how can a company continually build their brand image and at the same time build customer loyalty and satisfaction in a market of many similar products? Well, that, of course, is an old, old question. How in the world can we break out of the commoditization trap we have? And by the way, every product will be commoditized sooner or later, no matter how innovative it is today. If it's successful, then sooner or later somebody else will want to do what this company does as well. So count on the fact that you're going to be in a market of many similar products or different ways to meet similar needs that customers have, which is basically the same thing. Now, if that's the case, then what you want to be able to do is to get the customers to start building your brand image for you. And in that way, you do things that are newsworthy so that they actually are telling each other about you on YouTube and Twitter and Facebook and things like that because you're producing such great results for them. So but also thinking about what you really are to your customers. If you are the name of product that you're selling, then you're never going to stand out from the crowd, or you're only going to stand out if you spend tons of money trying to do so. But if you are, in fact, a way to have a better life, if it's a consumer product, or the way to have a more successful business, if it's a business product, and you really work with your customers, taking their point of view to improve their situations, then you're going to be able to stand out from the crowd, even if the product itself is very much a commodity. One of our favorite stories is about a Necco in the Netherlands. They sold natural gas for a living. And if they were only selling natural gas, if they were in that product business, then they would be a commodity in a deregulated market. And people who buy that product would be looking for the lowest price. But because they know they must differentiate themselves, even though their product is still natural gas, the way they sell it is very differentiated. So they go in to their most valuable customers, people who run the big greenhouses, and they set up systems that manage the whole environment. So, gee, why do you need natural gas in the first place? To manage the temperature in the greenhouse. And, of course, you also need to manage the humidity and the carbon dioxide content. And Echo now sets up remote monitoring devices to make sure everything's going well, and even sells insurance products in case something doesn't. So they're no longer in the natural gas business, which is a commodity business. They're in the environment control business, which is very much a collaborative relationship business. And that's what you have to look for no matter what your commodity product is. Next question. What is the best way to make a potential customer a customer? How can we win over a customer and overcome their objections to doing business with us? Well, we think that there are really only two kinds of people out there in the world. There are the customers, who include people who are doing business with us now, where we have a measurable share of customers, and there are potential customers, and that, by the way, also includes potential customers, where we just currently have a 0% share of customers. And then there are all the other people out there who won't be our customers because either we can't serve their needs well or they don't need what we have or anything like that. So when you think about customers as the people who are currently doing business with us as well as the people who will do business with us in the future, then that gives us a little bit different perspective about how to make a potential customer a customer. First of all, we want to look for people who are like the very best customers we have. In many cases, our very best customers want to participate with us in recruiting other customers. Think about it. You yourself have some very favorite places. Maybe it's a bookstore or a restaurant. For me, I have a photo website that puts out, that produces 3.5 by 5 inch pictures. And as far as I know, as far as I've been able to discover, that's the only one. PhotoWorks.com, by the way, so please go there and do business. And I love them so much that I want you and everybody else to go do their business there so that they'll stay in business so I can keep getting my 3.5 by 5 inch pictures because everybody else only makes 4 by 6s, a size I can't really use for various purposes. So what you really want is to set up a situation where your own customers are the ones who are telling other people how to become your customers. And there's several ways to do this. A Lexus dealership, for example, had a thank you event in which they hired somebody very impressive and fabulous and gave a wonderful dinner for their best customers, but also invited some potential customers. Well, they didn't have any salespeople at this dinner. Guess who sold the new cars to the potential customers? Or likewise, on websites now, customers would rather hear from total strangers, that is other customers, about whether particular products are good or not. So your product has to be great. And then you want it to be in a place where it can be reviewed by other customers. And because many customers now won't buy anything in any channel without being able to read other customers' reviews because they trust what total strangers say more than they trust the manufacturer or the retailer. So that's sort of the situation we're in now, and I hope that helps. Next question. What is the difference between CRM, CLM, and CEM? I've seen so many different views on this. I almost consider CLM and CEM as subsets of customer relationship management as a philosophy, but many people associate CRM with the IT solutions only. I have to tell you something. I think this is an excellent question. We start asking about customer relationship management, customer lifetime management, customer experience management, and we start getting all bogged down in the terminology, And instead, we should probably think about the whole point here, which is really, how do we make sure that we increase the value of our company by increasing the value of the customer base? Well, we have the CRM solutions over in the IT department. We have lifetime management in our management dashboard, metrics, HR rewards systems area. We have customer experience management in making sure that our product delivery service is all perfect. But what really matters is that we are doing everything we can to make sure that every customer that we have is worth the most to us that can possibly be the case. When I was traveling recently in Europe, I met several folks who actually have titles like this, Chief Lifetime Manager and Chief Lifetime Value Manager. And I thought that was a great way to think about the goals and responsibilities that some of our best people inside our company should have. The accountability is not just for managing the experience, but for the value of the customer as a result of the experience. It's not just for managing the IT of the relationship solutions and the data management, but for managing the value of the results of that. So I guess if I were to choose any one of these, I would probably think that managing the value of customers is probably the most important task, and there's a very important ways to go about that. The tactical solutions underneath it are managing experience, having the right tools with relationship management, IT software, and making sure that we're using the right metrics and acculturating those metrics into the system with HR, report outs, and building that into our expectations of our own employees and their accountability. The next question, during each stage of the customer relationship development process, what should be the focus and main activities of a global organization? You know, I think this is an excellent question. Because when we look at the customer relationship development process, the real challenge for it is really integrating everything that we do for a particular customer. So we have a 360-degree view of that customer, not just across all the communication channels, but across all the product divisions and geographic regions where that customer does business with us. In an ideal setting, what we are able to do is have a customer for whom we have a complete understanding of all of his interactions with us, all of his transactions with us, and eventually we can anticipate what that customer will need next from us. If we're experts on the customer and presumably experts on our own product, then we may be in a better position than anyone, our competitors, even our customers, in helping to figure out what products our customer needs next in order to help him achieve his own goals within his life, within his business, however that will work. So the real case here, the real top priority for a global organization is to make sure that we can see each customer at the customer level across all parts of the organization, at all the points of service and contact, at all the points of transaction, at all the points of interaction, where data is coming in, where it's collecting, so that we have a complete picture of that customer in order to anticipate what we can do for him next. That's a very tough capability. It's a very high order, but it is where a global organization should start when they think about building real customer relationships and setting up customer relationship development over the entire organization. And our final question this month, how would you define perfect customer service? Great question, and I can give you a really short answer. You know, there's a book out by David Jaffe, that says the best service is no service, and I just have to agree with them. That if you really want to provide the very best service you can, then what you want to do is make sure that customers never think about your service. That whenever they use the product, or they call with a question, or they use your website, or they have any contact with your company at all, that it's just a positive experience that doesn't require them to come back and get extra service or ever stand in line. You won't have to worry about things like wait times for phone calls and things like that. I know I'm exaggerating the ideal here, but the whole point is that what you really want to do is make things so easy for customers that they don't have to think about whether or not your customer service is really great, that they will instead just think you are really great. This is Martha Rogers of Peppers and Rogers Group. And I look forward to answering more of your questions in the future. Thanks so much.
Thanks for joining us this month. If you'd like to submit a question to be answered by Don Peppers or Martha Rogers for our next installment, please visit searchcrm.com and find the Ask the Expert section. For Search CRM, I'm Megan Kelly.